This is Will's Band of the Week for December 16th, 2009. Okay, we're back with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will.
This is Chris.
And this is Barrett.
And we're going to continue our string because we've determined now that we're so good at doing these best of lists or favorite lists or whatever. We're going to take it up a notch. And we're going to tell you about some of our favorite music of, what do you call the 2000s decade anyway?
I believe they're known as the aughts.
Okay. Best music of the aughts, according to us.
Yeah, Barrett and I decided that we're just going to start knocking out decades and start doing best lists from all kinds of different decades. So look for the best flapper music of the 20s coming up on the next podcast.
Yeah, I think that's great. We'll just go decade by decade and knock them off one by one. So you guys were saying when we were consulting before this podcast that you weren't even sure that we should do this as a top 10 or a countdown list.
Yeah, that was kind of my idea, was that, since I figured we might overlap quite a bit on a lot of these albums, what we should do is just do kind of our 30 albums, that you should listen to from the 2000s. And as it turns out, this is my one gripe, is I let Barrett do his list first, and of course, like 8 of his albums are ones that I would have had in my top 10, so... There are really two ways of going about looking at this. On the one hand, he gets credit for picking these albums. On the other hand, even though I'm essentially picking albums like 10 through 20, I essentially get to pick 20 albums since most of the ones that Barrett had, I would have had as well. So, yeah, you got no complaints from me.
Yeah, you get more picks. So, and if Barrett stole any of your picks, you can just mention that.
Right, and if the listeners don't like anything that I pick, it's probably one that Chris also
yep,
picked.
Probably. So we got a ways to go here. I guess I should mention that at least as of recording time, what we think we're going to do is divide this into 2 podcasts so they won't be too tedious and bog down your computer too much and your attention span. So this will be our picks 10 through 6, and we'll separately do the top 5 of each of our choices. So let's turn the floor over to Chris for his number 10 album of the decade.
Yeah, in the interest of time, I was going to plan not to talk as much, just because anytime I do talk, basically I just say, "Oh, this has got a great melody and it sounds like Southern rock." So I'll start with my number 10. I picked The Hives' "Veni, Vidi, Vicious." It's from 2000, I believe. Just started off the decade. You'll notice that a lot of my picks are actually from the first couple of years of the decade. I don't know why that might be. But yeah, I just think it got the decade off to a rocking start. I think it got people kind of engaged in Norwegian music since where are the Hives from? They're from Sweden, I believe, right? Something like that. They're from over there. And I think they kind of paved the way for other Norwegian bands. Well, that's not Norwegian, but other bands from that area to come over here. So let's just go ahead and play. What song did I choose?
Hate to Say I Told You So.
There you go.
This is The Hives from the album Veni, Vidi, Vicious. Kicking off the decade with a rockin' start. We'll be right back. Yeah, I'd have to say that was a rocking start to the decade.
Definitely. And yeah, so they're from Norway or Sweden, one or the other.
One of the other.
But Scandinavia really kicked some butt this year and had this decade, had a lot of popular bands. That was the first that I can remember.
Okay, Barrett, how about your number 10?
My number 10 is The Hold Steady, Boys and Girls in America, which I think came out in 2007. And the song that I chose, the most of their stuff is pretty rocking, but I chose their power ballad called First Night.
Okay, this is The Hold Steady.
So I think a lot of people that like The Hold Steady probably would have put Separation Sunday on their best of the decade list, but I heard this one first, so that kind of tends to happen to me. If I hear something first, I'm likely to like that album more than one that I hear later, even if it's, you know, supposedly a little bit better. So I think that's the case with this.
Yeah, that's a definite factor. I think there are at least two albums we're going to be discussing on this podcast where that issue is going to come up again.
All right.
So, let's mention where they're from. The Hold Steady is from Minneapolis, right?
They're from Minneapolis, and then they all moved to Brooklyn.
Okay. Yeah. That happens a lot, doesn't it?
That does happen a lot.
Western bands like The National from Ohio, they moved to Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
There must be, I would think the Brooklyn music scene would just be, it'd be really cool.
I would, yeah. And speaking of things, you know, scenes that really blew up in the 2000s, Brooklyn.
Totally.
At the beginning of the decade, it was all Detroit, and then all of a sudden, Brooklyn overshadowed Detroit and everything else combined.
And don't forget, it was little Robert Zimmerman that went to Brooklyn from Minneapolis and became Bob Dylan.
Good trivia, yeah, there, like Chris. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to myself now, and my number 10 is from a band called Not a Surf. And this is their album Let Go from 2002.
This is a great album, by the way.
The story behind this is that they were, I think, on the verge of being a one-hit wonder. They had a sort of novelty hit in the 90s called Popular. Did you guys remember that song?
I do.
And there was kind of a gimmicky video, and it was catchy and maybe kind of fun. But it was like, when you saw that, you thought, okay, there you go. That's their career. And somehow they survived it and came up with some really good music, and I think this was the highlight. So this is from the Not a Surf album Let Go, and this is called Killian's Red.
I'm putting this night down to bed, 'cause I was sitting off the chair.
Yeah, that really is a good album. You'll be happy to know that if my wife were to make a top 10 of the decade, that would most likely be at the top of it. So you're definitely in good company there.
That's good.
Well, you told the story about them being kind of the one-hit wonder in the 90s and then coming back. That actually happened a couple times in this decade where you had bands like even like Fountains of Wayne, who, you know, they had their novelty hit and was Sink to the Bottom in the 90s, and then they kind of had a resurgence in this decade. And even in the podcast, we talked about the Flaming Lips. You know, they had She Don't Use Jelly.
Right.
And then come back, and now they're, you know, the godfathers of alternative rock. So that seemed to be kind of a recurring theme for kind of novelty bands of the 90s to come back and make somewhat of a comeback.
So who's going to be a novelty band from this decade that's going to surprise us and come back? I don't think there are novelty bands anymore, are there?
Yeah, they don't make those anymore.
Lou Bega, Mambo Number 5.
Suddenly they'll be the critics' darlings.
A little bit of Jennifer in my life.
Okay.
He'll be playing the Super Bowl in like 2018.
Well, we're up to number 9. And here with his number 9 pick of the decade is Chris.
Yes, number 9 here. I picked Bonnie Prince Billy's Master and Everyone. There are any number of Bonnie Prince Billy albums that I could have picked, since he's essentially putting out one or two a year these days. And I think in 2006, I had his album as my number one album of the year, The Letting Go. But this one came out in 2003, and I liked it actually a lot more. And it's kind of the opposite of a lot of the other music that I like, kind of where it's, you know, happy music, but kind of a dour type of subject matter, where, you know, you have like the Smiths who have happy music, but they're talking about, you know, really kind of depressing type of things. This is just the opposite of that. It's, you know, it's really slow, almost kind of depressing music, but there's just a ray of hope and of sunshine in there somewhere, and I really like kind of the dichotomy that way. And it's really, you know, most of the music that I say I like is melodic, and it's, you know, it's really when in his career where he started to put together you know, a lot of the melodies. And so let's go ahead and play Joy and Jubilee, and I think you'll get an idea of what I'm talking about.
Okay, here we go. Good track. You went right to the heart of the album with track 5.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's really lush and it's really personal, and, you know, you can almost hear kind of like the wood floors creaking in the room when he's recording it. And it's just, you know, I just kind of love that man-made feel about it.
I actually looked over at you guys to see if somebody bumped the mic when one of those sounds came on. You know, it's like, it's either he's like tapping the guitar or his foot or something.
A little bit of that sound was from Will's dancing, though.
Well, yeah.
Let's be honest about it.
Yeah.
But Yeah, that I think I'd put Bonnie Prince Billy. I'd call that the maybe the artist that my favorite artist that didn't land a spot on my top 10. I loved lots of his albums, and he had a lot of them this decade.
You guys had a lot of stuff on your list that I looked at, and I thought, God, maybe that should have been on mine. And on Barrett, you had a leftovers list, too, and I'm like, oh, man. Maybe there should have been a Sigur Rós album on there.
Yeah.
But I liked the one that had no title with just the parentheses.
Right.
That was my favorite, I think. All right, let's turn it over to Barrett for his number 9 pick.
My number 9 pick is the Go Team, and I can't remember the year that came out, somewhere in the middle of the decade.
2005, according to my
records. Exactly in the middle of the decade. And I don't know that I would tell anybody that I think this is one of the best albums, because it's mostly sampled music, and you know they've got some cheerleading and clapping and singing over the top of it and stuff, but a lot of it is sampled. But I think the reason I'll remember this album the most fondly, maybe of any this decade, is just how much my son loved it. And so he was 5 when it came out, and we took a trip when he was about 7 and must have listened to it 30 times. And so I remember it very fondly, and I think it's a great album too.
If you can listen to it 30 times and it still makes your list, that's a real compliment to the album, too.
He's playing the son card on us.
Yeah, he is.
I remember out playing catch, and we were listening to the Go Team.
Yeah. That's right. Going for the sweet spot. Okay, this is the Go Team from the album Thunder, Lightning, Strike, and it's called Bottle Rocket.
I gotta say, you have the re-released version that they put out after they had copyright problems with the first version.
Okay.
Because I've never, I mean, the song is so incredibly different. And I heard most people might not notice the difference, but after listening to it 30 times.
Yeah, you know.
way more than that. It's really different. That's the first time I've heard that. And so
they do
I think
a
they
lot.
Some of the stuff that was sampled, they re-recorded and changed it enough that it's not plagiarism, and some of the stuff they must have got permission to use, because you know the basic sound of it is the same. But yeah, crazy.
That's interesting. I knew there were a lot of remixes and different versions of the songs. One thing about that album, it really is it all kind of sounds like that, but it somehow holds together and it's pretty good. It doesn't get tedious.
Yeah, I mean that's the whole album's just a ton of fun. And I'd really be interested in seeing them live to see how that translates into a live show. I know they played Lollapalooza a couple of years ago, and I caught a little bit of it on the web, but it'd be interesting to me to see, you know, how they translate kind of that energy to a live performance rather than what you hear on the CD.
Yeah, I wonder if they could do, you know, more than just dance around to recorded music, you know, if they could incorporate some actual live stuff. Do you know, Barrett?
I don't know. I've seen little things on YouTube and stuff, too. I guess it'd be like a hip-hop show.
Yeah.
Or a lot of, you know, a lot of sample-based hip-hop shows that they'll just, I'm assuming, because I haven't been to a ton of them, but sing over the top of recorded music and samples and stuff.
Well, you've rapped at a lot of them, but...
Well, that's different. It's actually, I'm actually the MC, but there's a splitting hairs here, but... Yep.
You've moved a lot of crowds.
Barrett is also known as MC Barrett, actually. Okay, I'm up to my number 9, and we're going to start kind of tying together the themes already, because my number 9 is Fountains of Wayne, just mentioned by Chris. And also, I've got a little kid theme to throw in here, too. The album I picked is called Welcome Interstate Managers from 2003. My son was about... One of my sons was about, I think, 6 at the time, and at the time we were at least listening to it in the household, and it quickly became his favorite album. It probably still is if you were to ask him. And it's just a really catchy pop rock album with a lot of really well-written songs that probably to some people would be maybe a little bit of a guilty pleasure just because it's pretty straightforward, but it's well done, and they have kind of goofy lyrics that are almost like a... Well, sort of comedy lyrics in a way. And when I was making my list, I didn't initially have it on the list. And then I started going through my list of albums in iTunes and I stumbled upon it. I thought, hey, wait a minute. That's got to be on the list. So this sort of has been, in our house, pretty much a family favorite. I think everybody in the household likes it. So I'm going to play a track called Valley Winter Song. This is Fountains of Wayne.
Hey, sweet Annie, don't take it so bad. You know the summer's coming soon. Choking under salt and dirty sand, and it seems the sun is hiding from the moon. Your daddy told you when you were a girl the kind of things that come to those who wait. So give it a rest, girl. Take a deep breath, girl. Meet me at the Bay State tonight. The snow is coming down on our New England town, and it's been falling all day long. What else is new? What could I do? I wrote a valley winter song to play for you.
And that's really when they started toying around with different styles as well. You know, you have a song on there that sounds like, you know, kind of a bluegrass song, and then you have a song that, you know, it sounds exactly like an Oasis song, and, you know, they kind of jump back and forth from styles, and that really is a great album.
Yeah, and they get away with it somehow, even though, like, there's one called Hung Up on You that's sort of like a country song, but somehow it works, even though, I guess, just without having necessarily a theme, they just write good songs. So, now we're up to Chris's number 8. What do you got, Chris?
All right. This one is absolutely unavoidable for me. It essentially owned 2004. And once again, it's a band from the 90s that had a big resurgence in this decade. It's Green Day's American Idiot. And, you know, when I had first heard that Green Day was going to do a rock opera... I can't say that I was exactly doing backflips over it, but, you know, after giving it a listen, and there are two songs on there that are about 10, 11 minutes long, each with about five different songs contained within them. And, you know, you get a lot of value for your dollar because there end up being about 30 songs on the album total. So, but, you know, the songs are strong. They have the ones that eventually ended up getting played on the radio. But from front to back, you know, I couldn't get this one out of my CD player back, you know, when I still actually had a CD player back in 2004. Okay, so I picked a song that is kind of instantly enjoyable, whereas some of them kind of it takes a little while to get in there. So I picked She's a Rebel.
Okay, this is Green Day from the American Idiot album, and this is called She's a Rebel.
She's a rebel, she's a saint, she's the salt of the earth, and she's dangerous. She's a rebel, vigilante, missing link on the brink of detention. From Chicago to Toronto, she's the one that they call, oh, what's her name? She's a symbol of resistance, and she's holding on my heart like a hand grenade.
This was one of those when I saw it on your list, and I thought, yeah, this probably should have been on my list.
Yeah, I mean, the whole song is two, maybe three chords, but it just always seemed, you know, when you're thinking, God, I want to listen to something, it always just kind of seems what I was always in the mood for that year. So
I had, I think, one Green Day CD from the 90s, and I liked it, and then a lot of years had gone by, and I kind of thought, okay, you know, I didn't think I'd ever buy another Green Day CD. And then I started to read the reviews of this that said it was good, and I thought, well, why not give it a try? And I was just shocked at how good it was. It's a really, really fun album. I remember listening to it on my treadmill, and the treadmill's kind of loud, so I had to have the stereo. I used to have a stereo, you know, back in the old days before I would have an iPod with me all the time. I had a stereo set up by my treadmill, and I had to turn that thing up just like to totally maximum. and that's how I listened to this album. It was just great.
This is quickly becoming like geriatric music hour.
Yeah.
Like Benny Goodman is like number 4 through 6 on my list.
Yeah. I, in the 90s, actually, Will and I talked about this off the air. I kind of took the 90s off for, you know, the most part. I got some of the big things, but not like I did in this decade. And Green Day is something that I, you know, is obviously really aware of. Everybody was familiar with the songs, but didn't get it in the 90s. And so this is the first one, and maybe one of the only ones that's going to be on this list that I'm not familiar with at all. I don't know this album.
You might have to go back and listen to it.
That I can be like one of the listeners and say, hey, I like that. I'm going to And send Chris cash, right? Or how about the artists? Don't the artists deserve it even more than Chris? That's debatable, but maybe 10% to Chris and 90% to the artists.
Okay, we have reached our first consensus. And the consensus is that both Barrett and I think that the 8th best album of the decade was the album Turn on the Bright Lights by Interpol.
Yeah, that was Interpol was huge this decade. And I can't say that I listened to Interpol a lot in the last several years, but when they came out, it just felt like a game changer, and I think it revived revived people's interest in Joy Division. And, you know, that comparison is really obvious, but to me, and nobody ever mentions I think it sounds even more than it sounds like Joy Division. It sounds like Echo and the Bunnymen. Yeah, he's got an Ian McCulloch voice more than Ian Curtis.
I always thought Joy Division, but looking back on it, I was a big Echo and the Bunnymen fan too. So
I mean, the Joy Division is the stronger comparison, but I think that I'm just saying you got to listen to it and hear some Echo and the Bunnymen in there as well, and that always goes overlooked. And that I'm correcting that.
Okay.
Right now.
So we picked different tracks. So let's be radical and just play at least a little piece of each of the tracks that we picked. You picked one called NYC, which I believe stands for New York City.
Or in this case, I think it's New York Cares. It's kind of a sappy thing. I think this one came out in 2002. And, you know, that's when emotions were still running really high about the September 11th. And maybe sappy isn't the right word. It's an earnest song about New York.
Okay, this is Interpol from New York. Their song called NYC. Right, New York Cares. I don't know how I missed that.
Well, it's commonly when people see it, think NYC, they do think New York City. I think you can be forgiven.
Okay, thanks. The song that really grabbed me off this album is probably the hit, if there was one, called PDA. And when I heard this, I just thought, this is just totally rocking. So it's one of those songs that I still, when I hear it, it almost needs to be turned up loud. So I'm just going to play a little piece of it. This is Interpol, and this is called PDA. Yeah, I think those two tracks show sort of the dimensions of the band, sort of the slow, moody stuff and then the rockin' stuff when they choose to do so.
Yeah, if I got to play two songs from every one of my bands, then you'd get a better idea of them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, good point.
Interpol is just one of those bands that they're on the list of bands that I tried the most to try to listen to, and I just never caught on. I have Antics, I believe, is the album. And yeah. The song Last Exit, I think, That's the one that I really, really liked. And then the rest of the album for me just kind of falls flat. But, I gave it a really earnest, good old natured college try, but I just, they never caught on.
I think their albums have gotten less consistent as they've gone. I think, this one was their first full length and it's the most solid. Thus, number eight of the decade.
Number eight, consensus.
Okay. Now Chris is going to tell us about number seven on his list.
Oh boy. You better get ready for this one. This is an artist that doesn't suggest that you party. He doesn't give you the option of partying. He demands that you party. You have no other option than to party and party hard. This also is one of my son's favorites, and he's four, so I should probably be investing in some kind of therapy session in the upcoming future. But Andrew WK's "I Get Wet," and this is just, you know, an impossibly fun metal album, completely over the top, super produced. You know, it's got huge drums, and it's just you know, three of the songs, I believe. Three of the first songs are Party Hard, It's Time to Party, and Party Till You Puke. So there really is no double meaning in this album. He wants you to have fun, and it's just a lot of fun to listen to. So I went with Party Hard as my song.
Okay, this is Andrew WK from 2001 from the album I Get Wet, and this is Party Hard.
When it's time to party, we will party hard.
He doesn't equivocate, right?
No, there is.
When it's time to party, it's time to party hard.
There's no question about what he wants us to do.
This is the second album that I hadn't listened to that one of you guys picked in a little while that, you know, I was just thrilled to hear for the first time in quite a while. And the other one was Not a Surf, and the song that you picked for the first song they played on the podcast. It's kind of really bringing me back, and I hadn't listened to it in a while, and it's like, man, I gotta pull that back out again.
Yeah, putting this
exciting.
Putting this list together was really fun for me.
Very fun.
I just started listening, and I think I sent you guys an email that said, I've now determined the top 10. You guys don't even need to participate because I had them, you know. I was so excited. So I think now we're going to hear about Barrett's number seven pick.
My number seven pick after Chris's party song. I'm gonna bring it down. This is the morning after the party when Beck wakes up and realizes that it's not all about partying hard. And in fact, his girlfriend has left him, and he put out a whole album of songs like this back in what year was this? Well, maybe 2002. Apparently inspired by the breakup with his girlfriend, and called Sea Change, and a lot different than his other stuff before and since. More acoustic, more, you know, sad, less, not a whole lot of sampling. It's pretty straightforward, sad music. That's why I liked it. And The song that I picked is Guess I'm Doing Fine.
Okay, this is Beck from Sea Change from 2002.
Gordon Lightfoot groove to that one.
Like, yeah, that was the first Beck album I ever bought, and I liked it a lot, probably for the same reasons you did.
It absolutely broke my heart when I saw this album on your list, because that's in 2002. I lived inside this album, much like Luke Skywalker cuts open the Tauntaun and climbs into its guts to stay warm. I crawled inside this album for the entirety of 2002, and it's just a really personal album for me, and when I saw it was on your list, I pulled out my little Barrett doll and started picking him with, because this doesn't seem like a Barrett album at all. I didn't know you liked Beck at all, so yeah.
I also liked The Information, another Beck album. I could have put that on there if I'd have known, you know. I mean, it's an exceedingly sad album, and yet you didn't know that I would like it. You don't even know me at all, Chris.
I could have made you sad, and then I would have expected it.
Okay, I've got the floor now, you guys, and we're up to my number 7.
Rock us, Will.
Yes. Not going to rock too much. We're going to keep on the sad theme a little bit here. The Death Cab for Cutie album from 2003 called Transatlanticism, and sort of a theme of long-distance relationships. And my first exposure to this album was when I had to drive about 2 hours to a funeral, and I needed some music to listen to. So I stopped in the local CD store where I was and bought a couple CDs, and this was one of them. So I don't know if that had an effect on how the album eventually ended up making an impression on me, but anyway, it did make a lasting impression. So precisely a number 7 of the decade impression. So I'm going to play a little bit of the closing track, which is called A Lack of Color.
This is fact, not fiction, for the first time in years. All the girls in every girly magazine can't make me feel any less alone. I'm reaching for the phone to call at 703. On your machine I slur a plea for you to come home. But I know it's too late, and I should have given you a reason to stay, given you a reason to stay.
I think I was trying to beat Barrett for the sad song there.
I seriously considered putting We Have the Facts and We're Voting Yes, which is a different Death Cab for Cutie album on mine, because that was the first one of theirs that I had heard. And but I hadn't heard that one in a while, so I'll have to go back and listen to it.
Yeah, they had a pretty good run in the first half of the decade. I think they're still a pretty good band, kind of reaching a point of popularity, so you wonder where they're going to go from here. But that was a highlight.
By the way, I should mention that Beck, another kind of one-hit wonder during the 90s, although I kind of stuck with him, but he had, you know, this big hit with Loser and
right.
Showed up in this decade, you know, kind of now as one of the elder statesmen of folk indie.
You're right. He probably would have been predicted to be a one-hit wonder after
right.
Loser. Yeah.
And I'm going to do a bit of foreshadowing. You might say that about my number one selection, too.
Oh, okay. Got some foreshadowing going on here. Okay, but...
ABBA?
But not yet, because we're up to Chris's number six.
Ah, yes. The saga of Sam Beam, which this is interesting to me because I really haven't seen, you know, in all the decades-long lists, I really haven't seen this album show up very much, but it was quite the sensation there for a little while in the early 2000s, and it's Iron and Wine's The Creek Drank the Cradle. And, you know, as the legend goes, here's this guy, Sam Beam, and he's I believe he was some kind of film professor at a junior college in Florida or something, and sat down with his home recorder and just kind of made his own album in his basement with just he and his guitar, which, you know, gives it kind of the lo-fi feel to it, and it ends up signing with Sub Pop, and it sounds like they just released it as he recorded it in his basement without any real, you know, kind of studio touches to it. And, you know, again, just like the Bonnie Prince Billy album, it really made it, you know, kind of personal and human for me, and I think the songs are just brilliant. So the song I picked was Bird Stealing Bread, which is song two on the album.
Okay, here we go. This is Iron and Wine from The Creek Drank the Cradle from 2002, Bird Stealing Bread.
It's obviously, you know, kind of a breakup song, and the lyrics are just so aching because I think it just perfectly encapsulates, you know, kind of what you're going through when you break up, and, you know, you don't remember the big things, you remember the little things like sitting by the seaside, and, you know, there's a bird stealing bread and those types of things. So I think it's just every note is perfect in that song.
Who says you're not a lyrics guy, Chris?
I need to listen to that more carefully. I thought it was just about a bird stealing bread. Seriously. I liked Iron and Wine, and how many albums did he put out? Like four? Yeah. 2000.
I think so.
And the first two were really huge. And I think the next two returns diminished a little bit. But
well, yeah, I think another thing this album does is kind of foreshadows what happens in the late 2000s, where you have people who are now essentially able to record their own albums at home. And, you know, they're almost studio-produced albums with the new technology that you have. And this might be the last album where a guy just records it, you know, by himself, lo-fi.
And sometimes, ironically, it sounds better, which is strange, but just the effect. I had the Iron and Wine album, Our Endless Numbered Days, which I think is the one that came out after this one, and I thought it was great. And but I didn't go back and get this one, and then I thought that after that, he went more toward the sort of bluesy direction rather than the sweet pop direction. So I like the older stuff better. But definitely a good artist to highlight from the decade.
Yeah, it's a tough thing to have a follow-up to an album, especially if you're, you know, I don't know how old he is. He's old enough to have a beard, so he's got to be, yeah. You know, and he was a professor. He was a professor.
I was wondering if the beard was going
to
come
well,
up.
Well, you have to be, I mean, he's not 20. I mean, a 20-year-old doesn't have enough time to grow a beard like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, so you have a lifetime to write your first album.
Right, that's true.
And, you know, what, 9 or 10 months to write your second album, and then you got to...
Yeah.
Put something out.
Although this year he did come out with a whole set of B-sides, and a lot of those were kind of songs that he recorded that didn't make the cut that year, and they sound very similar, and they're all still very good. So
it'll be interesting to see what he does in the future. Okay, we're up to Barrett's number 6 pick for the 2000s decade.
My number 6 is the White Stripes. And the album is White Blood Cells, and that's the first one that I got, and I know they had a couple before it, but this is the one that really kind of put them on the map and put, I'm not going to say that Detroit wasn't on the map, because it was. They had the Lions and the Tigers and make automobiles, and but as far as musically in the decade that's about to pass, the White Stripes put them back on the map.
And they sort of put a style back on the map too.
Right. You know? The kind of the garage sound and
garage hard rock blues.
Blues.
Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin, right. It was a really exciting album, and they had a run of them there for a while. Continuing an incredible legacy of music in Detroit. Just, I don't know who can beat it. I don't think any city can.
This is another one that I thought, you know, I could have put on my list. It was on the fringe. And unique thing about the White Stripes is that they don't have any bass. There's no bass player. It's just one loud guitar. Sometimes they overdub on the guitar, but it's basically guitar and drums. So a lot of times I imagine, what would this band sound like with a bass player? And frankly, I think they would sound great with bass, but without it, they have uniqueness, and there's a lot to be said for that. And there, you know, there have been a few bands that have been the no bass bands, the two-person bands that we've seen.
Well, you mentioned the fact that they don't have a bass, which is funny because the song Seven Nation Army in the album that they did after this starts out with a bass sound.
Oh, that's right.
Like the dun, 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 dun.
That's right.
Which now... in sporting events all over the country, they now play Seven Nation Army. Like it's become a staple. It's become like the Who Let the Dogs Out for white people. And it's ridiculous. And if you would have told me in 2002 that the White Stripes would have like this sporting anthem,
yeah,
I would have said you're nuts. But they're playing it everywhere.
My son's been playing that down in the basement, actually. But I think Jack White just happened to pick up a bass and he was screwing around with it because...
I think that was a message for people just like you.
Yeah.
Will.
Yeah, I think you're right. This okay.
Is middle finger to Will.
Let's play some music, okay? The White Stripes is Fell in Love with a Girl.
Mother consider a cheating now. Red hair with a curl, yellow roll policy on any eyes for BB. Can't keep away from the girl. Still sounds in my brain, need a hell of a meeting. Can't think of anything to do. Yeah, my left brain knows that I love is fleeting. She just looking for something new. Yeah, I said it once before, but it bears repeating now.
Yeah, that song definitely belongs on the decade list.
My kids know that as the Lego song from the video.
Oh, the video is, yeah, Legos.
Yes, yep. I believe that's a Michel Gondry video, director of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Little
that's,
trivia for you there.
That's your second brilliant trivia item of the night. Very good. Okay, you know what? We're almost to the end of our first half of the Best of the Decade podcast. So I'm going to say Barrett started the sad theme, so I'm going to continue it, and it'll reach a crescendo here, and then we'll try to pick it up with some less sad music on the next podcast. But I've got a band at my number six called Cloud Cult, and they have an album called, well, they had several albums in the decade, and my favorite one was one called The Meaning of Eight, which came out in 2007. And the story is really, really sad. The singer and his wife had a two-year-old child who died, and they ended up writing a whole lot of music about it, or he did, Craig Minowa. And at times it can be sort of just unbearable, because he did write a lot of music about it and recorded probably, there's probably three albums that like half the album has this theme of this child who died. So it can be pretty painful to listen to, but it's pretty powerful too. So I'm going to play a track from The Meaning of Eight, which, by the way, the meaning of eight is that his son would have been 8 years old. So there you go with the sad theme. But this is a track from that album called Dance for the Dead.
This is the dance that brings the dead to the living. Just say, I miss you. Every day, you know. This is the dance that brings the dead to the living. They say, I'm with you. Every day, you know.
Cloud Cult.
I should mention that Barrett has left, and he's now sitting in the garage with his car running.
That's right.
oh wait, he's back.
Another Minnesota band, by the way.
That's devastating.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It really is.
Right?
It's a buzzkill, man. That's a total buzzkill.
Sorry, the fun is gone now from the podcast. So.
But I don't know. I mean, I guess the sing that song for him, and maybe someone that's in that position to listen to that song would be cathartic.
They have fans who've written to them, and if you go to their website, they've got lots of letters from people that where that's exactly true.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's, yep.
So this is an album that I got a promo copy from our friend Steven, and I listened to it a little bit after you had recommended it, Will, and I'm going to go back and listen to it now, but I'm going to have to make sure I'm not near any sharp objects when I'm listening to it.
That's right. Some of it is more sort of typical indie rock, catchy melody stuff, but then, you know, they get pretty dark here, as you can tell.
That does seem like, you know, one of the things where kind of knowing the backstory before you go into the album would seem to kind of change your whole perception of the whole album. And I, you know, it's not maybe necessarily the music itself, although I'm sure it's good, but you know, you just kind of feel for them, and it changes your whole idea of what the album's about.
Right, the whole context. My brother-in-law introduced me to this band, so I have to thank him. I've really gotten to like about four of their albums quite a bit, and they're still around, and they're a true indie band. They produce all their own albums and sell them all. And there's actually a documentary, and it shows them, like, you know, gathering the CDs and mailing them out to people. So
I think going from Andrew WK to Cloud Cult in about 2 minutes, I think I'm concussed. I think that was too fast of a move for me.
All right, well, that wraps up the first half. So why don't we tell the listeners I don't know, they can try to predict the second half. They can send us an email at willsband@yahoo.com, or they can go to the website willsband.net, where we will post our lists. And I don't know if we should post the list before we put up the second podcast, though. So might have to keep you in suspense. So,
all right. See you on the flip side, folks.
Okay. Good night, people.
Good night.